The January 27 press release said two things. Bluemont Inc. will be headquartered in Madison, number one. Number two, Bluemont Inc.'s CEO and president will be Roger Ervin, a former secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Revenue. So it's time for a newsmaker's interview with Roger Ervin. Roger, it's nice to see you. We've been bumping into each other in airports, so it's nice that you could come to the Wisconsin Ice studio.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for the invitation. I'm excited to be here.
Let's concede that the name Bluemont Inc. is not on everyone's tip of their tongue. So tell me about Bluemont Inc. I've got a whole page of questions.
Well, number one, it's actually, you know, we've sort of taken a strategy that a lot of companies have taken. Apple is a good example, right? And Apple doesn't really connote computers right away, and Bluemont doesn't really connote what we do. But Bluemont actually is a conversion of Blue Mounds because we wanted to have a real Wisconsin identity. So between the name, our core values are really now become very Midwest grounded, and, you know, things like ethics and hard work and transparency are really about what Bluemont will stand for. And then coming to the Midwest, where we can, you know, we can attract good people, and we can have a really interesting relationship with the academic and the business community here. And it's a new start for the company. International Relief and Development is the former name of the organization.
Okay.
And what we do is we are international developers. We work for governments around the world and institutions like the World Bank and the United Nations. We're one of the largest service providers for the United Nations. And we do everything from build those large refugee camps that you see on the news right now in particular, you know, the big with all the white tents.
Well, Bluemont is going to replace IRD. The IRD website says it's done, restored six cultural sites in Kosovo. 46,693 Syrian refugees have been vaccinated. 24,000 have been helped psychologically, the victims of violence in Colombia. Yep. And pads and tents, as you just said, to house 7,500 displaced in Iraq.
Yep.
So this is a mission in a sentence or a word?
A mission is that
we... Humanitarian?
Yeah, it's humanitarian. Our mission is to deliver locally driven. So we work with communities. We come up with a list of their aspirations, and we work with the donors, the governments or international organizations, and we match that. And then they fund it, and then our goal is to perform, to operate, projects that deliver development improvements, development advancements in over 20 countries.
Now, well, you have been, you've kept your family in the Madison area,
yep,
correct?
I have.
But you've been on the road for 5 years, IRD.
Mostly IRD.
IRD.
I worked for another large defense contractor when I first left government, and then I moved over to IRD a little over a year ago, and it was a change. They needed somebody to come in there and completely reintegrate the organization, change its mission, change its focus, and make it financially more stable than it was before.
Okay. Work through what you just said. Change its mission, change its focus. So Bluemont, a new arrival to the Madison area,
yes,
is going to, go ahead.
We are going
You're
to. we are changing the way in which we do business. Not only just humanitarian, but a new advancement in humanitarian response. So we work in the area called recovery. So we're not the first people to parachute into an emergency, but once those early intervention companies leave, they need other people to help the communities and the nation recover. So we work in that space, basic infrastructure, social services, those kinds of things. And then as they become more stable and resilient, we help them start looking at longer term infrastructure, roads, power stations, dams, and then the longer, more sustainable part of that, which is, you know, things like climate mitigation strategies that deal with agricultural resilience and community resilience and community reintegration and those types of things. So we always say that we work in a spectrum from recovery to resilience. And the way we do that is we have professionals around the world that work with local staff. So most of our staff, 95% of our staff are local. They're not Americans or Europeans. And but we have professional staff from the United States that oversee projects or work with integrated teams in those organizations.
Another thing that intrigued me in the press release is that Blumont has 1,500 employees. How
yes,
many?
1,500
across the world.
Across in 20 countries. Yep.
And then once you move to Madison, how many of them will be based here? Roger?
Well, we're going to start with about 30.
30. Okay.
And then we hope we'll grow from there. The idea, though, is for us to not sustain a large headquarters, but have quality staff that we pay well, that can be involved in all of our projects. So when we hire people here, it won't be just to have someone who's an accountant overseeing the books, but an accountant who can then travel to Pakistan or Afghanistan or Colombia or Niger or any number of other places where we have projects. So it's a great chance for people to work for an organization that's global and actually have the ability to go out and work in the field.
Do you deal with natural disasters like the Haiti earthquake as well as the Syrian refugees and the
yes.
Iraq problems?
Yep.
Well, how do you know which countries to work in and what services are involved? I kind of hear you say, let's take the Haiti earthquake.
Yep.
So there's an immediate response, and then a Blumont will come in kind of in phase two?
Right, exactly. We'll come in at phase two. There's several different ways in which we work because we have, I guess I should maybe explain the business model.
Please.
We have a holding company, and that holding company just operates the way any holding company does. You provide oversight resources, governance, and all that. Then we have three holding companies, one that focuses on our clients, such as the United Nations and the British government, because they have a certain way in which they like to operate in a certain space. Mm-hmm. We have a second holding, another not-for-profit, that just manages our USAID, the United States Agency for International Development, and the State Department. And they have a very specific way in which they operate. And then we have a for-profit, and that's really where we do work, like our engineering work as an example, because that's a very specific skilled work, and it's usually a for-profit type contracts. So in those three ways, we sort of deal with that spectrum that I mentioned earlier. So we'll come in the case of Haiti, we can come in one or two or three different ways. We can come in and say, hey, if the immediate need, or in Syria is a good example, if the immediate need is we have to get food to people right away, food and medicines, and the early relief people just set up stations, but their work is not meant for the longer time. We'll come in and we'll set up supply chains. We'll hire private sector companies to work with us so that we now can deliver food. I mean, it's starting to become more well known now, but we run almost all the relief supply chains from Iraq, Jordan, and Turkey into Syria.
Supply chains. So you don't run the actual centers for the refugees?
We do that too. That's another way. So one is to deliver food and medicines. The other way is to set up those sustainable community architectures like a refugee camp. Mm-hmm. We run the Sitari refugee camp, which is the largest in the world. It's the one you see on the news a lot. It has 100,000 people that are housed in a 4 kilometer by 4 kilometer radius.
Which country again?
In northern Jordan, on the Syrian border, right on the Syrian border.
You run the largest refugee center in the world?
In the world.
Who pays you to do that?
The United Nations pays for that one. And then that's obviously money that comes in from the United States and all the other donors. But they are the funder. They're in the camp, but we run the camp. We have subcontractors that we split the services up between so we each are doing our core competency, but we're the major service provider for the whole camp.
Well, who was the one, or would it be governments that would come in and ask you to do this?
Yep. Yep. They put out
and
bids.
And other nonprofits?
Yep. They put out bids, and then people answer the bids, and then they choose, they'll choose a prime contractor. And usually the prime contractor has a set of subcontractors on that. And then we'll go in, and we will set up the camp. And, in this case, what we did was the UN had other people set up the camp. And while they were, you know, while the motives were right, it wasn't really done with any kind of methodology. And then, so organizations like ours, we sort of have some templates in which we do this because of the years we've been working for 18 years doing this. So we come in, we will redesign the camp so that it works well. We'll set up health services, other social services, because the longer people stay in these camps, a lot of different things happen. So you really have to be prepared on all fronts for that. And then we'll run sewage systems, water systems, electrical systems.
So you need engineers, electricians, all of this.
Yeah. Yeah, all
now,
kinds.
But you don't have the professionals on Blumont's staff.
You would do.
You do.
We do. Sometimes we subcontract. Sometimes we have our own people. We have an engineering group. So we have about 60 engineers that work for us in Blumont. We have quite a number of people that do that are have a social sciences background, psychology, sociology, those kinds of things. And like in Colombia, for example, since the war's ended, there's a lot of communities that need resettlement. So those folks are professionals that moving communities into places where they can be sustainable, helping them, through all kinds of resettlement issues, everything from, just how do you get a job and how do you, sustain health care in your family, mm-hmm. to gender issues around gender violence that happens in those kind of communities as well. And really help people to get back on their feet.
How big a business is Blumont, and is it a nonprofit?
It's a not-for-profit. Yeah, we are about $170 million, and before we were much larger, but we've deflated, and we're now more focused. And I mean, we think that we'll probably be about 170, 180 by 2016, and probably closer to 300 million in 2017.
Well, what most strikes me, Roger, is you've seen the reports. The UN estimates that there are 50 million refugees,
yep.
the most since World War II.
Yep.
Iraq, Syria, is large parts of those countries yep. are destroyed.
Yep.
Afghanistan, it's not been resolved after 15 years at war.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're reforming at one of the most urgent times in perhaps the world's history.
Yep, yep.
Are those all business opportunities for Blumont?
They are. I mean, obviously, we don't look at it that way,
but
they are definitely business opportunities. In Afghanistan, for example, we run a project right now that has taken water from a mountain lake, and we've built 200 kilometers of canals into the Kandahar Valley. And if you remember during the war, that was one of the most violent places
yes.
on earth.
A lot of American soldiers lost their lives in Kandahar.
A lot. And a lot of Afghans did as well. And so what we've done now is we've dug these canals into areas that were really highly, they were high poppy growing areas. And now we have reduced the poppy population by 54%. And the Afghans are growing grapes, wheat, other marketable commodities that are giving them livelihoods. And that was something that the U.S. paid for. A lot of people don't know about it, and the success rate has been tremendous. And, now you're connecting agriculture, water, training on livelihoods, agricultural markets, agricultural supply chains. So those kinds of things all sort of come together in a project like this, and it's been highly successful. We are working now on an area where there's a dam. Kajaki Dam is one of the largest dams in that part of the world, and the idea is to create hydropower and water to more parts of the of Afghanistan, and we're one of the main contractors on that project.
That's one of the most, perhaps the most dangerous region in the world.
Yes, it is.
With ISIS and the tribal factions and how do you protect your employees?
We have a very rigorous security apparatus, and they've trained people, so a lot of people from the military and in other security services, and they know the areas, they're very professional, and we have very strict protocols on how our people work. We have a lot, like I said, we have mainly local people on our staff, so they know the region, they know the culture, and they're able to help integrate, and we're creating jobs for people, and people really appreciate that.
Are they local professionals, or are they expats? You mentioned former military.
Yeah.
Are many of them Americans now working in some of these areas?
No, it's mainly local. Like I said, we have all these engineers. Most of those engineers are local engineers. They've been trained. They've been maybe trained in the West or somewhere, but they've gone back and they work in their communities. And that's the great thing about Blumont. Blumont was one of the first companies to do that. And we do it very, very well. We're really, really proud of that. And so, so Americans working with locals to change the aspirations and the lives of people in those communities.
How do you work with faith groups and NGOs and local governments? And so you must have to coordinate with all these different groups to provide a service.
Yep.
And is it a service that some groups may say, no, that's not the greatest need for this community, so that's a local political decision?
Exactly. So we have a tagline that we use in marketing, which is collaborate, innovate, transform. And it's not just a set of words, it's the way we operate. So we always go in, and our most successful projects is when we've gone in, we've sat with the communities, we heard their needs, we understand what the donors want, and we go back to the donors, and we can deliver reports and papers on what those needs are and how we think would be a great solution. And many, many times those have turned into projects that have actually multiplied across the development spectrum. And one project in particular that we did early on in Syria during the Syrian crisis, it was called Syrian Essential Services, where we created supply chains of contractors that after there was a bombing or some military action, and their basic water, electricity, those kinds of basic needs were destroyed, mm-hmm. we could go back into those communities and immediately get water services or electrical services going again.
Let's talk about Syria. How do you avoid getting labeled as either supporting the government of Bashar al-Assad or the rebels or ISIS? You make decisions that must be unpopular. Yeah. I mean, how do you avoid the political side of it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think it's, we try to hire the right people. We look for community groups that are, that are not that are objective, and then what we do is we actually have a pretty we're very technology centric. So unlike other development organizations, we work almost strictly in the cloud. So all of our internal controls, we use mobile technology, we use social media. So like for example, in Syria, we use applications that are constantly communicating with the people who are working in those areas. So as we get information on where ISIS may be or where the government may be bombing, we're able to redirect our people so that they're out of harm's way. So we're really highly dependent on a very robust communications architecture.
So you have to be able to tell the government, the rebels, and ISIS, we have engineers in this area, don't kill them.
We try to. I mean, I think what we try to do is in some cases, you just have to avoid them, or it depends on how heavily the grip is on those communities. Sometimes you just can't get in. And especially in the north right now, I think that's what's happening. And so we work in the south and in the east mainly right now.
Well, with the refugee crisis, the worst since World War II, do you see some hope in all this, or have we not yet hit bottom as a world in terms of some of the refugees and the services they need?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question, Steve. I don't want to be negative, but right now today is a donors conference, and there's billions of dollars being committed to this operation, and we'll have to wait and see what the administration and the United Nations do next to try to stop this. And what happens with the Russians and the Iranians in particular, I think they're a real factor in this.
Yes.
But from my past, I was very much involved in Rwanda, Somalia, the installation of Nelson Mandela, the war in Ethiopia and Eritrea. So, I've been through a lot of this before. And sometimes you just have a situation where people don't hit the bottom for a long time. And every time you think that it couldn't get worse, it always seems to get worse. And same thing, it happened in Iraq, it happened in Afghanistan, but eventually they turn the corner. And so I'm hoping that that's what's going to happen in Syria, but people are going to have to come together and find that common ground, and I'm not sure we're really there yet.
How do you sell your services in light of some of these tragedies?
The interesting thing about Blumont is people know that we'll go anywhere to do the job. And that's a very different, there were times in Afghanistan where our company was the only one that would do the work. And it was highly dangerous work, road building, those kinds of things. And that's the way that we try to operate. But it's not just sort of a cowboy, rogue mentality. I mean, it's a really calculated methodology that we put in place to do the projects. And there's sometimes we just can't do it, though, you know.
Given the danger zones that that Blue Mountain workers work in, have you had some kidnapped and tragically lost some?
We've had people kidnapped and killed, both in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other places. It's just sort of part of the business, and we try. You know, I think we've probably had more success than others, but you know, we had a subcontractor that was operating out of Turkey recently, where two people were kidnapped by ISIS and beheaded.
When you have a Blue Mountain worker kidnapped, do you pay ransoms to try to get she or he back?
No. It usually becomes we haven't had that situation in a long time, but I think it becomes more of the State Department. I mean, if it's an American, the State Department the State Department will take over at that point. Just like, you know, when the French or others were kidnapped, it becomes a government issue at that point. So we really would stand back. In the cases that I'm talking about, they were local Lebanese nationals, and they were taken, and it was really kind of out of our hands at that point. They were actually dead before we knew about it. And it was unfortunate.
A Blue Mountain budget, you said, would be about $170 million?
Yes.
What percentage comes from, you mentioned the UN, the State Department, yep, and donors, and explain the concept of donors.
Yeah, we have, donors are anyone who gives money for relief or humanitarian efforts. You usually go by the term donor partners, and our largest donor partner is the United States government, mainly USAID, but we have a pretty large program with the State Department as well, and in other parts of the government, but mainly those are our two big U.S. donors. We do take money we have partnerships with corporations. Tom Shoes is a good example. We deliver a lot of shoes around the world for them, and Lutheran Latter-day Saints are another one of our partners, and we're really proud of having those kind of partnerships. Overseas, the United Nations is a large donor, especially the humanitarian and relief organization. We have a growing business with the British government. The British government is very involved in the Middle East, and they're really committed to that, and we do some work with them. We've had some large projects with the Australian government, especially in Afghanistan, that have gone really well for us, and we're really proud of that. And occasionally, even local governments come to us and ask us to do work as well.
The press release, well, talk to me about the synergy and the advantages of locating in Madison, because the press release mentions all the experts, about a half mile away at the University of Wisconsin. So was that a major factor?
Absolutely, absolutely. We being in Washington, sometimes you're just another consulting firm. And my belief is that there are billions and billions and billions of dollars going into the government services and government contracting and consulting business. And you know, if you look at the U.S. budget, I'm guessing 75% of all discretionary spending in the budget is managed by a contractor.
Oh, yeah, 75%.
It's a significant amount. Mainly the federal government, the government employees, they manage the mandatory services, but the discretionary services, they're managed by contractors. And so all across the government, you have all these contractors, and they're mainly huddled in Washington and around Washington and Arlington and Virginia, and it's a huge driver for industry there. But they don't really have to be there, especially with technology now. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to try to be one of the people that starts that. There are others that came before us, but we want to start a new wave of that. So bringing a company to Madison of this size, I think is a really important statement that let's bring the work back to the taxpayers and then find new ways to do that. We being in Washington, we don't really have access to a world-class research organization. So coming here and being able to partner with the UW System Schools, mm-hmm, I think is a really, really important important part of what we want to do.
Well, are you talking engineering? Are you talking business?
Yeah.
All of the above?
Not all of the
what
above.
What do you really like that the UW does well in terms of its research helping you help Blue Mountain?
Yeah, I think that there are a couple really strong centers of excellence that we want to partner with. One is the Wisconsin Energy Institute. I mean, as I may have said earlier, there are really like three or four parts of there are really three or four aspects of society or the development of society that the donors are now focused on. Mm-hmm. I would say it's infrastructure, power, water, and agriculture.
Oh, we have in Milwaukee the
exactly.
Water Council, UWM.
Yeah, we're excited UWM about Milwaukee. That. Yeah, we do a lot of we have. As an example, other than, you know, I told you about the irrigation project in Afghanistan, but we've put all new wells into the aquifers in West Bank and Gaza. We've done all of those. So water is a really big part of what we do, and it's a really big part of the developing world going forward, irrigation, all those kinds of things. So what we want to do is we want to look to the Water Council, look to the university, you know, look to the limnologists, former land tenure organization, parts of the university, certainly the Wisconsin Energy Institute, and the whole idea of microgrids in particular are really interesting for us. And then the School of Engineering, where a lot of really interesting technologies have come out, and there's a lot of really good people there. The last one is that of the Department of Statistics at the university now is really heavily into data analytics. And one of the things that I think is really important in development is not to just manage projects, you know, open projects, manage them, and close projects. But open projects, manage projects, start to derive knowledge off of those, mm-hmm. and then impart some really keen insights, and then return those insights to the donors and potentially to the next project. And so the whole applied learning aspect of our work is a really
so Madison really critical. Made a lot of sense for you.
It makes perfectly good sense.
You've been around the world in the last few years with your. Tell me about the one project that really struck the biggest chord from you personally, from an emotional standpoint, because you know you were helping people.
Wow.
The one that really strummed your heartstrings.
Yeah,
the most?
Yeah, you know I'm. There are a lot. I'm actually hesitant because I'm going to Columbia on Sunday, and that project down there has really made a difference in people's lives. And I've heard a lot about it, and I have a feeling that may be one of those where I talked about the community resettlement. But when I was in Afghanistan, I have to tell you that I was really impressed with our work there. I mean, we have hundreds of Afghanis working for us in all kinds of different ways. And they are actually, not only do they have well-paying jobs, but they're really changing society there. And I was like, you know, I didn't know that before. I mean, you hear the stories, you get that people are recanting, various tales to you about what's gone on there. But Bluemont and its predecessor did an amazing job in really difficult times to change things. And one of the places I haven't been yet is Iraq. And apparently we've had a really, really great run in Iraq. In some areas, particularly in the Kurdistan areas, we've done some very, very amazing things, and still some of that work is still going on. And while things have been tough in some of the worst parts of Iraq, we did some good work.
Well, so you hired, you don't want this interview to generate thousands of resumes because you want local people in these different countries, correct?
Right, exactly.
But when you move Bluemont here, what type of people are you going to look for your office?
Yeah, thank you. So, I mean, so accountants, very important. We have a lot of money that flows through the organization. We have strict government controls, and so we need really good accountants. So that's one thing that's very, very important to us. The other thing you may find interesting is we are now building, we've got one of the largest what's called combating violent extremism projects in the world. And that's in central West Africa.
Bluemont does?
Bluemont does. And what that project is doing, it's taking various ideas and turning those ideas into platforms for communication and training for people who may be susceptible to Boko Haram and ISIS's entreaties to join.
So you're fighting against people who are likely to be preyed upon by social media, yep. by Boko Haram and ISIS.
Exactly.
And this operation is based where?
In Niger, Chad, and Burkina Faso.
And have you already seen results?
Yes, we have. Dramatic results. And what we want to do is, it's not just simply, you know, we do things like traveling theatrics. We do things like radio shows. We've started 300 radio stations in those three countries. We have, they do monthly or daily shows, and it's all about, you know, community involvement, community communication, having people call in and, you know, and talk about the kinds of things that may be driving people towards those kinds of organizations. We have training for government officials and local officials and imams and other religious leaders. And the newest thing is we're now building, this is what we're going to do in Madison, we're building a digital hub. And that digital hub will have content managers on social media and basically trying to bring all of these activities together in social media and then to drive people to the development space where they can get jobs. So it becomes then a cycle that we hope is going to have some really positive reverberations in those communities. But the great thing is that this is another thing why Mattis is important on this is not only can we take advantage of the technology community here mm-hmm. That are developing social media apps and all those kinds of things, but the returning Peace Corps volunteers who've been out in the field and not only are trained in the colonial languages, English, you know, Spanish, Arabic, or French, but now who've been out in the field and learned the local languages.
UW-Madison is one of the biggest providers of Peace Corps
yep.
volunteers. It really is. Okay, final question.
Sure.
You want to refocus Bluemont. Tell me what Bluemont looks like if you're successful in 5 or 10 years, Roger.
In 5 or 10 years, I'm hoping that Bluemont will be highly organized to take professionals, American professionals, European professionals, to work integrated in communities in more countries, you know, 2 or 3 times the number of countries we're in now, and to really have a very, very well-structured methodology to advance development. And that would be, the undergirding of that would be advanced technology so that we can get a multiplier effect on our work. And then that work can be replicated more places, and other organizations can take advantage of it. And a lot of that, the driver of a lot of those ideas, are going to come from the university community.
And you don't have any small dreams, do you? No small dreams.
Why
no
dream
small
if it's going to be small?
Roger Irvin, President and CEO of Bluemont. Well, we want to welcome your company to Madison.
Thank you.
And great to see you again.
Thank you. I'm proud to be here.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.